Hello and welcome to Life With No Plot, the podcast dedicated to books. My name is Denise and I'll be your host. On this week's episode, we will be discussing Eve 2.0 by Winter Lawrence and A Curse So Dark and Lonely by Bridget Kemmerer, as well as our teasers, our top tens, and a brand new feature that I didn't feature last week, which I really hope you like. So let's get started with the current reads of the week. So I'm going to start off the current read segment by letting you know the books that I finished from last week. Obviously, from the opening, you know that I finished Eve 2.0 by Winter Lawrence, and more about that later. I also finished Queen by Amy Carter, and so that's the fourth series I finished this year off of my Complete the Series list, so that's really exciting for me. I also had, and I don't know if any of you have had this as well, but just one of those experiences where I pick up a book and start reading it, and it is almost physically impossible to put it down. I did that this past week with The Grace Year by Kim Liggett. It doesn't come out until beginning of October sometime. I don't remember the exact date, but I had an ARC from NetGalley for it, and I figured I'd go ahead and get started so I could get the review ready. And I couldn't stop reading that book. It was so good. So you'll hear more about that book as the publishing date comes closer. But what I'm currently reading right now, I'm still reading Shantalo by Kara Martin. And oh my gosh, that is such a spooky book. I don't know what's happening, but it is creepy. Oh my gosh. So I'm waiting to see exactly what's going on there because there's so much that's not explained right now. The other book that I just started was The Memory Thief by Lauren Mansey. This is another NetGalley from NetGalley ARC, so I'm looking forward to reading that one. It seems like it's more of a straightforward fantasy, which I actually haven't read as many of those as I used to, so I'm looking forward to that. I also started A Torch Against the Night by Sabaa Tahir, which is the second book in the Ember and the Ashes series. And I really just started. I haven't gotten very far into it at all. But so far, it's still that same beautiful writing and the characters I really grew to love in the first book. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how that goes. I'm also still reading Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince by J.K. Rowling. And I mentioned last week that I've been reviewing the Harry Potter books a chapter at a time. And I think I started doing that in July or August. And it takes a while to get through them. It's going to take me even longer now because I think I'm only going to do one chapter a week. But that does mean that I may be able to bring my chapter along feature here on the podcast. So I'm still trying to work out how I want to do that. But that's something to look forward to. But those are the books that I am currently reading this week. This week's teaser comes from The Memory Thief by Lauren Mansey, and the teaser segment is actually hosted on the blog on Tuesdays, and it comes from Ambrosia at The Purple Booker. You can find her at thepurplebooker.com, and here are the rules if you would want to play along. You grab your current read, and you open to a random page, share a few teasers of sentences from somewhere on that page, and try not to include any spoilers. So here's the teaser. When I see the letter nailed to my door, I know something is terribly wrong. The envelope is covered in fancy handwriting and sealed with a wax stamp the color of dried blood. I don't wonder who it's from because only the minders use red ink, and they never send good news. That's actually the first few sentences in the first chapter of The Memory Thief, so I thought that it really captured my imagination and made me want to read more. Hopefully it made you want to read more, too. That's from The Memory Thief by Lauren Mansey. Our top 10 list for this week is inspired by topics that come from Jana at thatartsyreadergirl.com. This week's topic, I'm going to admit, I struggled with a little bit, and that was the top 10 favorite snacks to eat while reading. The reason I'm struggling is because I'm trying to be very careful with what I eat right now, and so trying to think of all of the yummy, wonderful snacks that I like is not necessarily a good motivation for what I'm trying to do. So in that particular situation, I'm only going to give you 5 snacks right now, just because. So, in no particular order, here's my first snack. Chips and salsa. Okay, so there is a particular order. That's probably my favorite, my go-to snack. I love chips. I love salsa as long as it's really, really good and well blended. I don't like a chunky salsa where you can scoop up a chip full and it's only like one piece of tomato and nothing else. I like it so that it's real nice and blended with some good seasoning, maybe a little nice roasted, fire roasted quality to it. That's my all-time favorite. So number 2 on the list is my second favorite, and that is something I discovered from a coworker, and that is buffalo chicken dip and chips. So the way that she made it and the way that I make it is, it's so cheesy and spicy and just wonderful. You take some cream cheese and you spread it kind of thin, but you spread it on the bottom of a pan, and then you take your chicken, and it can be any kind of chicken. You can get like the little cans of chicken, or you can just get like rotisserie chicken and shred it up, but as long as it's shredded pretty small, sprinkle that on top of the cream cheese. Take your buffalo sauce, whether it's really, really hot or mild or somewhere in between, and drizzle that on top and, you know, make a really good layer of it because that's the whole point, right? And then you take a handful of shredded cheese, again, whatever type you like. I've been using Colby Jack. And sprinkle that in a good layer on top. Stick it in the oven. Usually I do around 375 and bake it for about 10 minutes or until it all gets bubbly and cheesy and wonderful. So it's so good. Oh my gosh, I can eat a whole pan of it, and that's really not good for you, but it's so tasty. Oh my gosh. Okay, moving on. Number 3 I put on the list is popcorn. Because I've been going to the movies a lot more lately, and just the hot, buttered popcorn, it's so good. And usually popcorn tastes better when you're in a movie theater, but, you know, popping it yourself at home is probably a little bit more healthy. Maybe it doesn't taste quite the same, but it still gets the job done. And, you know, it's good to eat while you're reading as opposed to watching a movie. Or you can do both. Number 4 on the list is where we're getting into the sweets, and that was chocolate chip cookie dough ice cream. That's my favorite flavor of ice cream because, honestly, I could just sit there and eat a package of cookie dough just right there. I know they say you're not supposed to, but I always have, and that's just somebody trying to ruin my fun. I'm assuming, though, that the cookie dough and the ice cream is okay because otherwise they wouldn't market it as something you can just sit there and eat. But that's my favorite flavor of ice cream, and I love it. And then number 5 on the list is anything that is cookies and cream. So whether it's cookies and cream ice cream, just regular Oreo cookies, or any other dessert that's kind of cookies and cream themed, like a cake or a pie or whatever. I love that combination there. So anything that uses those two things and puts them together to make something yummy. So that's it. That's all I'm sharing because otherwise my diet is going straight in the toilet. So that is my top 5 this week for my favorite snacks to eat while reading. So this is a new feature that I'm including on the podcast. It's been part of my blog since March, but back then I got this, I don't know if you want to call it a craving or just this desire to go back and read some of the book series that I used to really, really love as a kid. So these were series that I read back when I was, I guess, late elementary school into middle school and then towards the beginning of high school. And I loved the Sweet Valley High series, the Sweet Valley Twins, the Babysitter's Club. I loved R.L. Stein's Fear Street if I wanted to get a little spooky. But there were just some really enduring series. I mean, Sweet Valley High has hundreds of books, and Babysitter's Club has, I think, 140 something. There's just so many of them. They're so prolific. And They're classic. I mean, everybody, even if you didn't read them back then, everybody heard about them because they were everywhere. And they spawned, some of them had television shows, some of them had movies, some of them had, Sweet Valley High had a board game, okay? So it was all over the place. So I thought that it would be fun to go back and read some of these books kind of with fresh grown-up eyes and see if they still held up, if they were still fun to read. I started with the Sweet Valley High series and read the first 10 books, and then I switched over to Babysitter's Club, and I'm working on getting through the first 10 books of that series, and I think once I finish the first 10, I'm going to switch back and forth every 5 books just to kind of keep it fresh. But I wanted to tackle those two series because there's just so many of them. And I knew that if I did that, I would have plenty of material to last a good long while. So this week, we're talking about the Babysitter's Club Book 8, called Boy Crazy Stacy. And the main plot for this book is that the Pike family, which, if you read these books, if you remember Mallory, she joined the Babysitter's Club a little bit later on, but she is the oldest of the Pike family's kids. They have 8 kids. 8. That's a lot. So they're planning on going on vacation over the summer, and they hired 2 of the Babysitter's Club to go with them to help with the kids, which is a great idea. That's a really good idea. So the two that go with them are Marianne and Stacy. And Stacy meets this beautiful, hunky lifeguard and falls madly in love with him. She thinks that he is in love with her too because he's very flirty. He calls her by cute little pet names. He gives her his lifeguard whistle. And she just thinks that this is love. This is forever. Yeah, these characters are 13 years old. So, you know, you kind of understand. That's kind of how we saw the world when we were 13. But it's funny because I think since this book is told from Stacy's point of view, we're supposed to really sympathize with her and her plight. But I so sympathize with Marianne in this one because she is getting so frustrated with Stacy because Stacy is so distracted by the hunky lifeguard. And not that she's neglecting the kids, which she's not, and she wouldn't do that because she loves her kids. But she is not paying as close attention to the kids as she maybe should. And Marianne's kind of left picking up all the slack. And with 8 kids to look after and all of the stuff that comes with 8 kids going to the beach, all of their towels, all of their buckets, all of their goggles, anything that you would take to the beach, multiply that by 8, add in a few more toys. That's a lot of stuff to keep track of. And Marianne kind of got stuck having to handle all of it, on top of getting really, really, really sunburned. So I totally felt for Marianne in this one. I was on her side. Because, I'll be honest, when it comes to, like, the Babysitter's Club, back when we were reading it, we all had one that we identified with. Marianne was the one I identified with. I never identified with Stacy. To my little 12-year-old eyes, she just seemed kind of glamorous. She always wore, like, all of these fashionable clothes. Well, fashionable to my 80s eyes. She was from New York City, and she just seemed so worldly and so just out of my league. I just didn't think that if Stacy was at my school, she would be friends with me. But I really identified with Marianne because Marianne was very quiet. She was very shy. She didn't really talk to people that much. I'm so a Marianne, but that's probably why I identified with her more in this story and just in general. But finally, Stacy realizes that the lifeguard's just kind of being just silly with her. He's not interested in her. I don't think they specifically said his age, but he's probably 18 or 19 years old. He's not going to be interested in a 13-year-old, honey. He's not. And so she sees him with his girlfriend or some other older girl. They were kissing out on the boardwalk, and she was like, oh no. She was all heartbroken about it, which, I mean, those things, when you're that age, everything just feels so so dramatic and real, and, you know, she'll be okay, though. I will say that both of them did meet another cute boy and his friend, and it meant that Marianne got to go on her first date, and Stacy got her first kiss. So it all worked out in the end. Even the lifeguard, he's happy. He's got, you know, whoever the girl was that he was hooking up with. But more importantly, our Babysitter's Club girls are also happy. And they still had fun at the beach. They got to go to the beach and have a good time. So this book definitely does hold up, because who doesn't love a good story about beach shenanigans? And with 8 kids around, there's a lot of shenanigans. But this one it was still so much fun to read. So that's Boy Crazy Stacy, Babysitter's Club book number 8. Our first review for this week will be Eve 2.0 by Winter Lawrence. This book is on blog tour right now, hosted by RABT Book Tours. And it just came out back in August, on August 27th to be precise, published by Fire and Ice Young Adult Books. So here's the basics of what it's about. Our main character, her name is Gwen, and she is a gamer girl. So she doesn't really relate to her mother, who is a former beauty pageant winner and tries to take her younger sister and push her in every pageant that she can. So Gwen just loves disappearing online into her video games, and she even has a boyfriend within her video game. His name is Pete, and so her and Pete play all the time. They live pretty far away. Gwen's in Colorado and Pete's in California, but on top of that, Pete's dad owns a video game company, so Gwen has gotten to help beta test some new video games, so that's something that she was always really excited to do, which I don't blame her. That would be a lot of fun. So a new game comes out and Pete sends it to her, but it never arrives. And Gwen goes to look for it and realizes after an ambulance arrives at her next door neighbor's house, and there's 2 boys that live there. There's Ryan, who's about her age, and then his younger brother, Ben. Well, Ben is gotten sick, like really weirdly sick. Like he's in a coma, and they can't figure out why. But he's taken to the hospital, and Gwen realizes that he was playing this new game because it was delivered to their house by accident, because their last names are very similar. Gwen's is Nielsen, and Ryan and Ben's is Nelson. So they ended up with the package, and it's like this like virtual reality set. It's got these goggles and these gloves and all this other stuff. So Gwen also realizes that Pete has also gotten sick, and it sounds like it's something similar. So it's just really weird. And she gets this idea that something in the game must be making them sick. So she decides to try it out. And Ryan does not want her to do this. There's also some tension between Gwen and Ryan. I think that they dated at one point and it didn't end particularly well. So there's this really strong animosity between the two of them. And they're very different. Like, Ryan doesn't like video games at all. He thinks that they're stupid. And Gwen, of course, takes great offense to that. But anyway, so she puts on the goggles and the gloves and everything, starts up the game, and turns out that this game is not just a game. It is actually a government simulator, and the virtual reality is extremely real. Like, if they get hit with something, they actually feel the pain. And soon Ryan joins Gwen in the game, and we find out also that they are now also in this coma, and they're also in the hospital. We get a couple little asides from Gwen's dad, as he's kind of keeping track of what's going on the outside, while these 4 kids are now within the game. So now Gwen's video game skills are kind of put to the test, but in a very different way, because it's one thing to sit there with a controller and try and play a game, but it's a very different thing to actually be inside something where you actually have to take a gun and point it and shoot it. So it's very different. And it was really kind of funny because the first game that they go into is actually like this little kind of like little kids fantasy game. So there are these little like wizards and little like gnomes, and they have to they're given an objective. The simulator is named Eve, and Eve tells them that the only way for them to be removed from the simulator is for them to complete the objective in the video game. So between the four of them, well, sometimes only three of them, because they have to find Pete because he's not always where they are. And then a couple times they lose Ben because Ben is not allowed to be in some of the simulations because he's too young. Was one of the simulations is called Commandos Creed. It's very similar to like a Call of Duty sort of situation. Another one is called, I think it was called Desolation, and it was like zombies. You're running through the street trying to avoid zombies. So they have to try and work as a team. Pete and Ryan hate each other because Pete has heard the stories about Ryan from Gwen, so he automatically doesn't like him. And Ryan thinks that Pete is just a condescending jerk who just thinks that he's the best thing in the world. So they have to try and work together, which is pretty funny. But they also have to figure out how to get out of this thing because they can't just get out. In fact, there's one point where Eve kind of tricks them and they think they're out, but they're not. And the simulation looks like their house and looks like they just woke up from playing in this game. And then they end up back into it. So we find out that Eve is kind of working independently. And we also find out from the dad perspective that the government is not really happy about the fact that these two kids, well, these four kids, got inside the simulation. And there's some talk about, as they say, terminating them, which means exactly what you think it does. So it's really fun to watch these kids. They're trying to go through a game, but the game isn't really a game. So that kind of had a lot of hints of several different books. I mean, some classic ones, like there was couple where the game that's not really a game kind of has some hints of Ender's Game in it, whereas you're trying to be inside a game, fully inside a game, kind of felt a little Ready Player One to me. But overall, this was just, it was a fun book to read. Lots of action. I mean, think about it. If you're going inside these games, the reason people play these games is because there's a lot of action and adventure. So if you're reading about characters going through these games, you're going to have a lot of action and adventure there too. So it was just a lot of fun. And there has to be a sequel. I don't see one on Goodreads where it's been announced, but just the way that they left it, there's more to it than that. There's going to be some sort of consequences for what they did, and I'm curious to see what happens next. So that is Eve 2.0 by Winter Lawrence. Definitely check it out. So the second book we have for review this week is A Curse So Dark and Lonely by Brigid Kemmerer. This is the first book in the Curse Breakers series. It's a brand new series, and this is the only book that's currently out right now. It came out back in January of this year, and there was so much hype surrounding this book. I heard about it all over the blogosphere, and so I pre-ordered it to make sure that I got a copy. I think I originally tried to see if I could get an ARC and I got declined, but I was like, that's fine. I have heard so much about it that I'm going to go ahead and pre-order it because I want it that bad. But it is a fantasy retelling of Beauty and the Beast. But it's really, really different from other fantasy retellings that I have heard. So let's dive into it. There is a prince who is the prince of this kingdom called Emberfall, and he's been cursed by an enchantress because he was kind of a jerk at the time. So this sounds familiar so far. But he has to relive the season of his 18th year over and over again, and at the end of the season, he turns into a beast, a vicious, bloodthirsty beast. And so he's not a beast all the time. He just turns into one at the end of this season. So at the beginning of the season, he has this person who was kind of the commander of his personal guard, and his name is Gray, and he's awesome. But Gray would go into our world and basically kidnap a girl, bring her back to the castle, and there's still that element where he has to make this person fall in love with him in order to break the curse. So that's the Beauty and the Beast part of the story. But it's still a little bit different with that fact that he's not a beast the whole time. The next person that gets captured is this girl named Harper. She is not your typical beauty in, you know, in the Beauty and the Beast tale. She's not Belle from the Disney version. She's got a lot of issues going on. Her father is gone. I don't remember now if he had died or if he's just out of the picture. Her mother has cancer and is in really bad shape. And her brother is having to do some kind of illegal things to try and keep the family going. So Harper is actually not the one that Gray intended to kidnap. He was in the process of kidnapping another girl, but Harper kind of witnessed this and interrupted. So Gray ends up kidnapping Harper instead. Now, it's not that Harper isn't beautiful, she is. Maybe in a more simpler way than some of the other girls he was going for. But Harper also is a little bit different from what you think of when you think of your traditional beauty in the Beauty and the Beast story, and that is because she has cerebral palsy. So not only is she tries to be more independent, and she gives Prince Wren all kinds of crap for what he's doing to her and taking her away from her family, and she doesn't know what's going on with her brother, who might be in a lot of trouble, and her mother, who might be dying even as they speak. But she has a disability, and it's one that she's always had to work on overcoming. She has a very difficult time walking sometimes, but that kind of sets it up. They have to try and figure out a way to protect the kingdom, because the kingdom hasn't seen the royal family, and the rest of the royal family is dead because Wren, during one of his transformations, killed them all. And so he has to live with that. He's ended up killing his family, the rest of their guard. Gray is the only one of the army that's left. Because when he's a beast, he doesn't know. He has no memory of being human. He is just a mindless beast. So they have to try and figure out how to break the curse and defeat the sorceress. At the same time, there is an invading country that's coming into the kingdom and, like, pillaging the countryside and killing some of Emberfall's citizens on their way to taking over, because they have heard rumors of the royal family being gone have traveled beyond their borders. And so Emberfall is kind of ripe for the picking at this point. So that sets everything up, and there's a very, you know, antagonistic kind of feel between Harper and Wren. They butt heads constantly, but Harper does not know that he's going to turn into a beast. They don't tell her that. She finds out when it actually happens. So you kind of have this ticking clock throughout the story, because you know as soon as that happens, there's a good chance that Wren could just kill her, because he's done that to girls in the past. Some of them have escaped, most of them have died. And you have that ticking clock, knowing that he's going to turn into a beast at some point. You have the invading army that's coming in. So there's a lot more facets to this story than just the traditional Beauty and the Beast retelling. And it was really, really an interesting take on it. I don't think I've read one that was quite like this, and I loved the characters. Like I said, Gray was probably my favorite character because he's very stoic. He's seen some things. He has gone through all of this with Wren, and he's survived. He also really has a lot of respect for his prince, and not just because that's the ruler of his kingdom, but he really cares about him and wants to try and take care of him and figure out a way to free him from this situation. And eventually Harper kind of comes around to Wren as well. Is it love? It's complicated, because love often is. But the next book comes out, I believe, this coming January, and I can't wait to read it. We're going to follow up a little bit on what happened to Gray at the end, which I'm not going to get into because that's a spoiler and you need to discover that for yourself. And you just need to see how well, this book was so well written. I fell in love with it first because of the cover. The cover art is gorgeous. But after reading it too, I found it really, really interesting that they took this classic fairy tale and introduced a heroine that had a disability. And actually, I found an interview that the author had done because I was curious to see not just why that was featured, but why that particular disability. And it was because she had a friend as a kid who had cerebral palsy. And so she wanted to kind of take this idea of a curse happening with this fairy tale land and look at other reasons that people might think things are curses. Because that was something I originally thought about Harper when she arrives, is that maybe she was cursed as well. And that's not the case. She's an incredibly strong person, and even more so because she's had to overcome more than maybe most people have. So that I'm going to put a link to that interview in the show notes as well, because it was really, really interesting to kind of see where her ideas came from and the things that she was inspired by. So, yeah, definitely check this book out. If you love fantasy and you love Beauty and the Beast stories, definitely check out A Curse So Dark and Lonely by Bridget Kemmerer. It was a fantastic read. So that's it for this episode. If you would like to participate in the podcast, please do so. I love to hear from people. You can either leave a comment over at the official website, which is lifewithnoplotpodcast.com, or you can send an email to lifewithnoplot@gmail.com. And, you know, send anything. You can have comments or feedback, or if you would like to add something to the top 10 of the week, or share a teaser, or share a book recommendation. I always love to get those. Remember that we are now on iTunes and on Spotify, so please subscribe or share and let other people know about the podcast. So I'll be back next week with more reviews and more other tidbits. So until then, have a great week and happy reading.